Listen, friends don't let friends use Figma's native file search. It's been over a year since I've taken my cursor and clicked into that input and typed the name of a file that I'm looking for. And that's because Raycast's Figma file search extension is free and 10 times faster. I have it wired up to a hotkey, so at any point I can just type option F, the name of the file that I'm looking for, hit enter, and then boom, it opens directly in Figma. It's just another reason why I use Raycast for pretty much everything that I do on my computer. I seriously cannot recommend it enough. Head to dive.club/raycast to get started. That's R-A-Y-C-A-S-T. Okay, now on to the episode.
Our tools need to get us closer to the thing that we're creating. It's like a sculptor that spends all their time drawing a picture of the 3D sculpture and then spends the last 10% with their hands in the clay. The more layers of abstraction that we add, it increases our comfort zone, because for every layer of abstraction is an excuse or a finger point to something else or someone else, where I then don't have to take accountability. The closer you get to the real thing also increases your level of accountability and responsibility. And so why wouldn't we want tools that can give us greater conviction in the things that we are going to ship?
Welcome to Dive Club. My name is Rid, and this is where designers never stop learning. This week's episode is with Dan LaCivita, who's a co-founder and CEO of Play, which, if you're not familiar, is a tool for designing and prototyping mobile apps, only you do it with the native iOS materials. So this conversation is a deep dive into the state of design tooling. We talk about the ceiling for interaction design and different strategies that you can use to increase your technical literacy. But before we get into all of that, let's go all the way back 5 years earlier and hear from Dan why he was convinced that a tool like Play needed to exist.
I think from a market perspective, one of the things that I realized was, as an agency, we had just moved over to Sketch. Figma was still early days and not yet beginning their meteoric ascent. And one of the things that June said to me that was interesting was, he's like, all of these tools that we're seeing are really better versions of themselves. And I was like, okay, I agree with that. That's interesting. He's like, not to diminish anything that tools like Figma are doing, but it's a better version of the previous tool, but they are growing sort of vertically. They're not growing outside of this core origin, which is a vector drawing tool. The more I thought about the landscape of design tools was Figma's problem that they were solving, and ultimately did it extremely well, was how designers work, right? If you really think about the core problem, the big bet that Dylan placed, and he was right, was solving for how designers work, putting collaboration at the center of the process and the tooling and placing a bet there. No other company did that, right? Sketch didn't do that. Adobe didn't do that. And that was the kernel, the beginning of their success. And then I think for us, when we talked about it, we're like, well, what's the next big question that needs to be answered? And for us, it's like, well, how designers work, that's been answered. Collaboration is going to be at the center of every tool. It's got to be table stakes now. The next question is, we've got to solve for what designers make. Because ultimately, at that point in time, and even still now to a degree, the tools that we use really don't use the materials of the medium. If you think about it, designers are still using software that doesn't give them access to the medium that they're designing for. And so that started the initial kind of conversations of ideas around, well, what does that look like? What does design software look like that actually answers the problem of what designers make? And how do our tools actually speak to that in a better way than they do now?
I know you had a lot of discussion on whether to start mobile first. So can you take us to that debate so we can understand some of the strategy that went into it?
The idea of Play came from June's brain. And initially, you know, we were talking about it one day and he's like, what if we built a design tool? He's like, mobile apps are more complex and more nuanced than websites. It's like, so I think the tooling is going to sort of sort itself out there. And what we realized was like the complexity and the nuance of mobile products actually accentuated that chasm, right, between idea and product, right? Because of the tooling didn't accommodate for all those nuances and complexities. He was like, so what if we built a design tool on the phone? And I was like, I was like confused. I was like, what do you mean? Like take a, like the whole thing on the phone? Like, how is that going to work? You know? And he's like, yeah, I think we should do that. And I'm like, well, why should we do that? And he's like, well, I think we need to change the input device because it'll fundamentally make us think about the entire design tooling stack differently. And he said, Dan, think about this. He's like, right now, here's what I need to do as a designer. If I'm designing a mobile app for one of our clients, I need to design it in my design tool in a little cutout screen. I need to then get those images onto my phone because I want to, maybe I want to sit on a park bench and I want to look at it. Maybe we're designing an app for a mom to use in a grocery store where like I should use the app in the grocery store and look at it there on my phone versus behind my screen. He's like, so even for me to get my designs on the phone is a huge pain. He's like, forget about changing them or iterating on them. He's like, it's a nightmare. He's like, what if we can experience the design directly on the medium and then iterate it in real time? He's like, so I'm seeing my design and I want to change something and I don't need to remember it. I just, boom, I change it right in that moment. He's like, I think as a designer, that would feel like magic to me. So that was the kernel of the idea. We knew there would always be a desktop component, but ultimately, two things happened when we started with iOS. One, it fundamentally made us think differently about the entire product ecosystem. Versus if we started with a desktop, we probably would have ended up building a better version of what had been done before. And number two was, and I don't know if we actually realized this initially, it unlocked this entire sandbox that Apple had created for developers, but now we can serve these up to designers, serve all of this up for designers. And I don't think we actually realized how powerful that would be initially until we dove in and we were like, wow, there's an entire world that exists here that we need to spend all this time in Sketcher and Figma recreating these simulations and these sort of representative UI and artifacts, whereas we can actually design with the real thing in play because we can serve those things up inside of the tool.
So you raised just over $9 million. In November of 2021, when you kind of step back and look at where you're at today, now like 2.5 years later, roughly, my question is, how much did the actual execution deviate from the plan you were presenting to First Round in that fundraising deck?
Good question. Deviation from vision, not all that much. Details, there were definitely things that we thought we were going to do, and we did, and then pivoted away from those things. I'll give a couple examples. The big thing that we needed to do at that moment in time was build the desktop, a version of Play on the desktop. We always knew that this would exist, but the early feedback from users were like, yeah, but make this like now. We built a version on the iPad, which was like a stepping stone. It was largely using the same code base. You know, in hindsight, should we have just skipped that and went directly to desktop? Maybe. We have ambitions of being, you know, larger than just the Apple ecosystem, right? The product doesn't, right now, it solely lives inside the Apple ecosystem. We started to build desktop as the web version of Play Desktop, which was very challenging. And we built it with scalability in mind. Okay, this can now be a web inspector for engineers that don't need to install a desktop application. This can also be a place where designers who are designing for Android can also design, and then we can build the Android, you know, pieces and stuff. But at the end of the day, it was just taking too long, and we were adding too many layers of abstraction that I questioned whether or not we were ultimately delivering on the vision that we believed in as a company. And so we decided we're not going to do that anymore. Push pause on that. And Catalyst at the time, when we started building Play Web, was not where it was, let's say a year later. It got better. It's not perfect, but it's gotten better. So what we did was is we refactored some of the iOS work, and then we used that with Catalyst to build the macOS app. So that was probably the larger, I don't want to call it, it wasn't really a product pivot. It was a platform pivot, but we learned a lot of things along the way. And ultimately, I think with the macOS desktop app, ended up with a better product than if we had shipped what we were working on with web.
It's interesting to hear like the mobile first and even going to iPad next, because something that I think it almost forced you to do is reimagine some of the core interactions and design interface paradigms from scratch. And you get all these really interesting sliders. And pretty much everyone that's building even adjacent to the design tooling space right now is like you said, kind of just building vertically. They're just trying to figure out the 1% where they can innovate on what people are already familiar with. And yet a lot of what you are doing, there's just not as much precedent for.
Yeah, I think, and we sometimes forget, you know, when you've been doing this for a few years now, and now a lot of the work in the past, let's say 12 months, has been shipping the desktop product. Some of the UI and interaction models that were created out of necessity for the phone are pretty magical. You know, there are these moments where the whole idea of like the slider in iOS, and how do you create an interface that truly vanishes, where you can design on the phone, but that also gives you ultimate control over your design. That's a really hard brief. And so the whole idea of like the slider for iOS and the different iterations of that, where obviously there's the slider, but you can move it vertically, it makes the whole panel disappear. And then we iterated on the slider. How do you have a slider with notches and haptic feedback? When you delay your movement, it sort of zooms into the slider to give you more precision, accuracy. All these little things that, quite honestly, I've forgotten about until I go back into the app and I play with it. I'm like, oh man, this is pretty magical, you know? And I think the cool thing about that was we took some of those things into the macOS app, but you also needed to adapt to a different platform. And to be honest, I think sometimes because the team had spent so long creating new design patterns, that desire, I don't want to say hurt us, but there were some things and I was like, guys, do we really need to make that thing better? Like people do that thing on desktop all the time. It's really not broken. Like, let's just do it the way that Figma does. There are certain things. And sometimes I would get pushback from the team. And they're like, yeah, but this is better. And I'm like, okay, well, better why? Like better different or better as in improved? And there's always you've got to answer, you know, that question, I think. So yeah, there's always a balance between wanting to strike that high point of innovation to deliver something unique and beneficial to the users. And then other times where you're like, well, maybe we just lean into tradition here a little bit because it's what the muscle memory of people are. It's what people expect.
What are some of the parts of the product today where you think you have been able to reach that high point of innovation?
Along the journey, when we were building Play, a lot of the feedback that we would get when people would make a prototype is like, wow, this feels so real. When I send it to somebody, they have to install the app. And I was like, it's a friction point, right? And we would always talk internally. I'm like, what would be magical is if I send somebody a link, they tap on it, and they just experience my app. Like no install, no account creation, like nothing. And so a couple of years ago, we had talked about like, what if we can use app clips to do this? Like from a technical perspective, we're uniquely positioned to lean into this technology in a way that no other tool can really do. It wouldn't work for a number of reasons, mainly because at that moment in time, the maximum file size was too much to get our core renderer in and all that stuff. Apple obviously increased that max file size capacity. And so earlier this year, we rolled out the ability to send prototypes with app clips. To me, this is one of the most magical things that the product does today. And it's because we spend so much time creating these artifacts, whether it's a design system in Figma, a prototype, anything, and just my opinion, but anything that leads up to the end product being shipped is an artifact, right? It's not the product. It's a part of the product, or it informs the product. And for mobile product development, not experiencing that thing on your phone it just doesn't make any sense, right? Like we don't experience prototypes on our phone, not because we don't want to, but because it's really painful to do so. And so with app clips, there's this magical moment where I can send what I create in Play as a native prototype to any human being on planet Earth with any iPhone. It's gonna auto resize. It's gonna play instantly without any app install, without any account creation. And it feels and functions and looks like a native app. So for me, I think one of the most very long-winded answer of app clips are a game changer, because now it takes all the time that you spent in creating this artifact and it lets you share it. Because if not, it's still in this black box that you have to use, you know, video conferencing or a click-through prototype to experience. And what we need to do is unlock the ability for more people to experience the ultimate intent of what our designer is trying to communicate.
It makes sense that you bring up app clips because that was actually what got me excited to return back to play. Like, I remember when you launched and I kind of had this deep skepticism, like, I don't really want to make something on my phone. And then I saw the app clips out in the wild. I think you actually recreated a drawer interaction that was, you know, going viral on design Twitter at the moment. One click and then I'm able to experience it on my phone and it feels like butter. And it's like, whoa, that was an aha moment for me. I'm like, I get it now. I totally get it. And I understand how you are uniquely positioned to do that because, you know, what makes Play really unique is, yeah, you're building with the native iOS materials and the vast majority of people are just slinging around, you know, vector rectangles in Figma right now. So maybe we could talk a little bit about what you're noticing as far as how this shift in materials is influencing the design process. How does it impact the way that I bring an interface to life when I have to build with the materials versus I'm just like tapping R and drawing a rectangle in Figma?
Yeah, great question. So I think it's three things. So it's quality, it's precision, and then it's time. For the quality aspect, if you take something that's very commonly used in mobile products, let's say a date picker. In order to make the date picker function in a tool like Figma, you have to create an incredibly complex noodle salad of things. And even with variables, and I don't say that sounds demeaning, but it's not meant to be demeaning. It's just the reality. And even with variables, you have to go through a lot of hoops to make something that should just function the way that I want it to function, right? So in Play, just one click, you have a date picker. You have all of the different views of the date picker. You have all of the different interaction models already built into the date picker. You don't need to do any interaction work there. It's just built in, right? Native sheets and modals are just going to work like they do in iOS naturally and automatically. If you're designing with a live map, instead of drawing a picture of a map, instead of having a ping of a map, right, in your design tool and then moving it around, you're actually designing with a live map with pins that you're able to connect to other cards. And okay, why does this matter? Because if you're doing testing, if you want to test an idea, if you want to test a concept, maybe click-through prototypes are fine. But at some point, if you want to test, you need to test at the fidelity that you're prototyping at. So if you want to test an interaction paradigm or a different pattern, you actually need to prototype that thing. You can't prototype half of that thing and expect to get the feedback that is going to be usable, you know, for that. So on the quality point, by designing with the native iOS materials, you are truly creating a one-to-one with the ultimate expression of that thing, whether it's a map, a date picker, Swift charts, gauges, sheets, modals, haptics, you name it. The precision point is equally important because if I'm creating that from scratch, I need to redraw that UI element, right? And now I've got to spend all of this time remaking this UI element that exists inside of this other ecosystem of iOS where I can have a perfect one-to-one precision with that thing by using the real thing instead of drawing a replica. And then third, and I think most importantly, is time. It takes hours and hours to recreate all of these UI patterns that are found in iOS, recreate them in other design tools versus using the real thing. Now the question is, you have all this time back. What do you do with it? You can now use that time to actually think about new ideas. Like, just think, consider how much time product teams and designers spend recreating certain things or trying to create a prototype inside of a tool that will never reach the level of fidelity of their ultimate intent versus doing something much quicker in a tool and then getting time back to think about more complex problems. And I think that's ultimately the biggest gift that anyone can get back is more time to think about the problems that they want to be thinking about.
I totally get the time piece. And it's also very clear to me how a tool like Play raises the ceiling by giving designers access to the materials. But I still also think that it raises the floor a little bit as well, because there's some semblance of technical literacy required in order to be able to make sense of the materials. You know, it's not this like open canvas playground where you can just absolutely position everything without even knowing that that's what you're doing in the design tool. So can you talk a little bit about that learning curve and again, like I still want to get deeper into how this impacts the way that a designer would think about bringing a UI to life when you have to, in some sense, play within the constraints of iOS even.
Yeah, it's a really good question. And it's a balance that we're trying to strike. So in Play, you have a very familiar infinite canvas, just like in Figma on the desktop app. You can work within, let's say, auto layout in Play. So if you're used to using auto layout in Figma, you're going to use V stacks and H stacks in Play. But they, again, padding, margin, gap spacing, the layout system in general is almost one-to-one in Figma, especially for those using auto layout. And then we're like, yeah, there's still a lot of people that don't use auto layout or don't want to start using auto layout, even when they're designing in Figma. So we said, well, how can we create more of a free form space for people to design, essentially placing everything in an absolute position, but still stay true to what we are building? And we're like, well, let's use Z-Stacks. It's essentially designing without auto layout. So you can you can draw a stack, you can place anything inside of that stack, move it around freely, do whatever you want. Is it the best way to design a full product? Probably not, for all of the reasons why using auto layout in Figma at some point is a better decision. So we've started to incorporate some of those things into the product, which I think have been helpful for users that may not be familiar with designing within certain constraints.
I think my favorite instance of that is just how Play is taking interaction design and putting it more into the day-to-day design process rather than like the thing that probably engineers actually figure out after they take all of your static UI. Because a lot of like the designers that I look up to and follow on Twitter and things like that are the ones that are really nailing this interaction design piece. Like in some ways, I almost see that as like the advanced level of the craft. And this is injecting it into earlier stages of the design process in a way.
When we talk about product design, we always, I think initially of visual design, but obviously it's interaction design, it's functional design. How does the product, the vision of what I have, how does that come to life visually? How does it look? How does it feel? How does it function? And those things are inextricably connected, especially I think when we talk about mobile product design, because we all know when something feels really purposeful, it has an impact on not only the user experience, but the intent of what we want that user to do. That could mean whether or not Airbnb gets that booking or doesn't get that booking. All of these design decisions, I think we all need to sometimes remind ourselves, have dramatic business impact, right? So why wouldn't you want to ship something with more conviction? And how do we get that conviction, especially when it comes to interaction models? It's trying new things, testing them, seeing what they feel like, and then experimenting until fine-tuning those things. That's the only way to do it. And so I'm glad you touched on it, because like the interaction design part in Play is, I think, one of my favorite parts of the product. But also when our users get to that moment, that's where all the aha moments come from, because that unlocks a level of skill in them that other tools aren't able to do, right? And so they're like, oh, I have this idea. I want to make it move a certain way. I can't do it in Figma. I don't have 6 months to spend learning origami. You know, can I do it in Play? And by the way, Play still has a learning curve, and we're always trying to improve that. But getting that interaction as you're designing it and then being able to share that and feel it on your phone, it's a really magical experience. And it's one of the big things that we're working on now. We call interactions 2.0. So variables, conditions, being able to write expressions. I'm not giving too much away, I don't think, but we're creating this idea. It may change before we release it. It's changed about 10 times. We're calling them prefabs. And so it's this idea of, what if I want to create something incredibly complex, but I don't know how to do that from scratch? Like, I might as well just code it. So what we're doing is we're creating all of these prefabs that any user can use, but you can sort of open that up and then get under the hood and then change and modify all of that. And then wouldn't it be cool if some of our power users who are creating these amazing things create their own prefabs? And now users can take that, fork it, make it their own, tweak it if they want. Like, you don't need to go under the hood, but if you want to, you can. But you can use that and create incredibly, incredibly complex things and new interaction paradigms. And I think it's one of the things that we're really excited about.
And I think that's where the ceiling comes from, right? Like, you're pulling designers out of their comfort zone in some ways and encouraging people to contribute more directly to more of the software creation process. And it sounds like maybe you're even dabbling in code a little bit, which reminds me of something that you said to me when we first met, like a month or two ago. You said you question whether or not designers really want to ship great products. Can you unpack that a bit for us?
I think maybe just tapping into the realities of the human condition for a moment. We all want to aspire to greatness in what we do. But I think the reality is most of the time, good enough is good enough. That's something that we have to contend with in building our product. But also, I think anyone building software in the space is, do most product designers truly want to ship a great product? Or are they more concerned with putting something great in their portfolio, or maybe saying that they were a part of a great product to help them get another job? By the way, none of these are bad things. None of these are bad motivations. But I think it begs the question of, what role do the tools that we use play in that? Are we seeking tools to truly deliver a better, great product? Or do we want tools that we're more comfortable with that can just do a very good job? I think we will oftentimes trade excellence for consolidation, excellence for comfort.
And it's not even just comfort zone too. It's like, you're giving designers more responsibility in a lot of ways. They can make a bigger impact, but that also means it's more difficult to point at engineering for why the actual product looks like crap.
One of the things that June has always said that has stuck with me is, he's like, you know, I think one of the most important jobs of a designer is choosing between the best options. What you want as a, I think, a great designer is, of course, you're going to rely on your gut and your intuition, but you want to have conviction with whatever solution you're putting forward. You want to believe that your idea is great and you have that conviction. And he's like, how can we get to that conviction if we don't even touch and feel our designs? It's like a sculptor that spends all their time drawing a picture of the 3D sculpture and then spends the last 10% with their hands in the clay. Our tools need to get us closer to the thing that we're creating, because here's the thing, the more layers of abstraction that we add, it increases our comfort zone, because for every layer of abstraction is an excuse or a finger point to something else or someone else where I then don't have to take accountability. And so again, maybe a hot take, or I don't know if many people agree with that, but the closer you get to the real thing also increases your level of accountability and responsibility. And so why wouldn't we want tools that can give us greater conviction in the things that we are going to ship?
And I love that. And I think it used to be more of a hot take. I think it actually pissed some people off, but it's a conversation that keeps coming up now. And I think a lot of it is because AI is opening capital D design's eyes to the reality that, like, yeah, maybe it's not going to be enough to just draw pretty pictures of a product in Figma X years from now. Maybe there is going to be this greater expectation that we're going to have to meaningfully contribute to what the users touch and feel and interact with. So we talked a little bit about, like, the landscape when you were starting Play. Gosh, so much has changed in 5 years. It's insane. So from this vantage point now, what are you seeing? And specifically, like, how has AI impacted the way that you think about your roadmap and the future opportunities that you want to capitalize on?
We have some ideas specifically around the new interaction model that we're building. I think has interesting, I want to give enough without giving too much away. I think it has interesting legs, right? Because if you think about it, imagine if you have an idea of how you want something to move, and you just, instead of, like, figuring out, okay, I've got to, like, add this interaction and do this, like, I don't know, what if you just tell it this is how you want it to move? And then that's done. Maybe there's something interesting there. I don't think too many people are thinking about the role of AI for interaction design versus the role of AI for visual design. It's very focused on the visual right now. Very focused on visual design, very focused on code generation. But there's a big, I think, span in between there that I haven't, that I think there's a lot of area of opportunity for.
I totally agree. I think the conversation around AI is, like, 99% around generation in general, which, sure, will have a place. And sometimes it is very valuable. Like, I do a lot of image generation with Visual Electric, but I don't do any product design generation. And honestly, I'm not even that excited about it. I'm so much more interested in AI's ability to empower me to create things that weren't previously possible. And almost always, like, the backbone of that should be in code, like an interaction. And maybe even thinking about how can I take something that previously I would point it at and say, this is just a prototype, and making it more possible for me to bridge that gap and contribute my work to the production experience that someone is actually, you know, getting on their phone as a user. That's where I'm much more interested in AI.
Yeah, I think that's super interesting and compelling. And it'll be interesting to see, how do our tools change and adapt when the tools that we use to experience the world around us also change? You know, what does, again, just in the last year, whether it's a phone or a pen or goggles, I think phones are probably here to stay for a bit, just my personal take, but that won't be forever. When my kids are, you know, in college or older, like, what is, I don't know, they use it, maybe they're using phones, maybe it's a different device entirely. Are we still just designing those interfaces with the exact same tools? Because at that point, it'll be 20, 30 years that the tools haven't fundamentally changed. I think that's a long time for there not to be any dramatic innovation.
How much are you thinking about that? Like, how big is the vision for Play? Because I think it is interesting having it connect so deeply with Swift UI. Like, when I watched the early spatial computing demos, one of the key takeaways I had was like, shoot, Swift UI is a big deal. This is like a real skill set that I am going to want to invest in if I'm going to want to build interesting things 5-10 years from now. So how big is the Play vision?
Obviously, right now, when you look at the product, it looks very, certainly very iOS focused. And maybe you could even, if you draw a larger circle around that, Apple ecosystem focus. And in the near term, we certainly have plans for Android, which is on the roadmap, to expand out, obviously, outside of just iOS. But if you've opened up Play for desktop, you've got your canvas, and in the center of the canvas, your page, which is a phone. That's the medium. So that can and maybe will change, right? From an iPhone to an iPad to watch, tvOS, visionOS, xOS into the future. That's obviously, we're working within the realm of still like the Apple ecosystem. But that fundamental perspective can be applied outside of just one code base or one ecosystem, which is to say, creating a piece of software that leverages the materials of the medium you're designing for is a fundamentally different way of approaching product design. And that is a departure from just drawing a picture. Again, I'm not diminishing those tools. They absolutely have a role to draw a picture of the idea versus designing the software. I think we have to remind ourselves, we're designing software. We're designing software. It's more than a picture of the thing. We're designing the thing, the product that has so many other factors into that. And so for us, can we build tools that enhance and unlock new creative ideas, at the same time give people more conviction over the things with the things that they ship?
Hey guys, real quick, if you know me, then you know I love products. So I want to take just 30 seconds to tell you about three of my favorites. Now, anytime that I'm designing and building a website, you better believe that I'm going to use Framer. I made the switch recently and I'm never going back. Now, once it's time to animate my designs and showcase my work, that's when I'm going to use Jitter. It's like Figma, only for motion design. And every step of the way, I'm gonna be using Raycast constantly. It's the cornerstone of how I use my computer and the way that I stay in flow while I work. Now, I hand selected Framer, Raycast, and Jitter to partner with me so that I could do these interviews full time. So if you wanna show them some love, it would mean a lot. Okay, now on to the rest of the episode. It reminds me of something that Jenny Nguyen from FigJam was talking about, and she was communicating this idea that even though she works at Figma, when you are designing an infinite canvas product, even that pushes Figma as an interface tool beyond what it's capable of doing. Like, you can't create static representations of something that is infinite. You hit walls at every single turn, and how that led to much more reliance on engineering to explore early ideas because you had to prototype in code. It was only possible to explore ideas using the actual materials. And when I kind of look, you know, as far into the future as I'm capable of looking, that feels like a defining characteristic, where we're just going to see this departure from very 2D confined software representations where it will be a forcing function, where we will need fundamentally new tools. And I hope that we live in a world where more designers consider themselves software designers, and maybe we're even looking at software creation as a more connected flow rather than two very distinct disciplines.
If you think about today, how much time is spent, I would say largely wasted time, or how much effort is spent trying to make something feel real outside of its intended medium, right? So for us, it's the phone. But why is that a wasted effort? Because it lacks the nuance and the detail and the precision and the craft, the feel and the function. What's interesting though is we will opt to spend more time in a tool we are familiar with that does not as good of a job versus trying a new way to do the better job. I mean, this is obviously, you know, how software gets adopted, of course, right? But that's why the role of, I think, you know, design engineers is, I think, so important and fascinating. And largely, I think, design engineers that I've spoken with, their tool of choice is code. A lot of what they ship is code, or a lot of what they work in with is code. But think about, well, what could a designer that maybe doesn't have as much experience in Swift deliver the same level of fidelity with a tool like Play and be able to get their ideas to a level of conviction? That is what the product unlocks, what we hear from a lot of our users, which is incredibly powerful. Because at the end of the day, going back to one of the things that June says, is if a designer could explore all the different options and feel what they feel like, get them to the level of conviction to say, yeah, I don't even want to put those in testing. It just doesn't feel like. And then, yeah, let's go and test these, or let's share what these actually look, feel, function like. To give more people the power and the ability to do that, I think is a worthwhile pursuit.
I love that point, because you're right. Like, all this is just greater fidelity than a vector prototype. It kind of makes me then wonder, like, how much are you prioritizing the quote-unquote handoff experience right now? Because to me, Play is predominantly like a prototyping tool. I'm sure there are, you know, I know you do like some tokens and different pieces that contribute to the handoff experience, but like, how much are you thinking about helping designers really make that jump to contribute more of what they are building to the actual code base? Is that even a priority right now?
We are exploring different problems that I think need to be solved, or are trying to be solved, or and have been for some time, right? Which is, are we trying to give designers tools to get them further down the chain to code fidelity? Or are we trying to make it easier for engineers to get closer to design so they can take things earlier and get them to a level of product fidelity faster? Those are two different types of users and probably two different sets of features that, depending on what you're trying to answer for. So the current state of Play, we generate Swift UI code as you're designing. It could be copy and pasted into Xcode and render the same views. Is it perfect every single time? Depending on what, if you make some crazy layout, right, using like VStacks and HStacks and absolute position and pin this to the page, it's probably not perfect every time. We've tested it a lot. It's, I think, very good, and we've gotten good feedback. From engineers, they say, at worst, this is an exceptional reference point for me. At best, engineers say, like, I can actually use this in some of our production code, because, like, this is, it saves me time. I don't have to write this. And some of the questions we get is, how can this be integrated more in my Git workflow? Do I think every engineering team wants that? No. There's engineering teams that have an entire design system that's coded already, right? So it's outside of Figma. They've built the entire design system. And we're getting questions of, can we actually feed our coded design system into Play and then have designers build with those already coded components? So there's a lot of different, I would say, avenues and requests that we're getting. And a lot of it depends on the size of the team, the sophistication of the team, what the team is building, right? What is the level of product that they're building? Is an 8-person engineering team, or a 50-person engineering team, or a 100-person engineering team? They all have different needs. So trying to suss out the different avenues that we might want to pursue there, something that we're working on.
It's a challenging product strategy, something I've been thinking a lot about, because there's so many, you know, Figma to React plugins right now, and a lot of tools that have this promise of allowing designers to generate full coded apps. And it's like, yeah, that's fine. And in some ways exciting, but like developers are the only thing that matters. Unless you are building a side project, you got to get whatever code is generated to be acceptable, and you got to get developers excited to integrate it into their own day-to-day workflows. And that's a pretty high bar.
Yeah, exactly. When it comes to the code itself, the idea of ingesting things that have been created to then give to designers, you know, that's probably something that is an enterprise level option for larger teams that maybe we offer. We've done some tests and it is possible. And I think, you know, pretty interesting if you think about that, right? Because inside of an organization, there may be a very well-kept design system in Figma, and then an engineering team has created that entire design system and coded that. Okay, where does the building and the prototyping take place? It's in a space in between, using neither of those things well.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. It is this weird middle ground that in some ways does feel like it's up for grabs, or maybe it might shift ownership as our tools evolve. So I'm very excited to see what you all continue to ship. Everything up to this point is super impressive. Everything from the way that you're positioning the product to like the details of the product itself, the interactions like we talked about. I'm definitely looking forward to seeing where you go from here. Dan, thank you for taking the time to come on and talk to us a little bit about the journey and everything that you're thinking about today.
Thanks, man. Thanks for having me, and happy to be here.
Hey, it's Rid. Don't forget, if you want to go even deeper, each week I send an email out to over 10,000 designers with bonus resources and key takeaways from these conversations. So head to dive.club/email to sign up. Okay, I'll see you next week.